Blog Talk Radio.
Whoa, good evening again. Apparently, we were not live for the first 25 minutes of the show. I am the one and the only JP. Across the table from me is Mark Foray. Mark, how are we doing? We already discussed a bunch of other subjects. What's your thoughts here so far?
Well, we can jump back into anything that we were talking about before, of course. Obviously, being a huge Broncos fan, the game from Sunday is on my mind. The offense looked a little weak. Defense looked great. We'll see where they go from here.
I agree with that. I think Thursday night is a huge process for them, a huge game against the Kansas City Chiefs. Is that a home game or an away game?
That's an away game.
That's
not an easy place to play. The team looks fantastic. Alex Smith has seemed to have found his niche. Jamaal Charles ran all over the place. And even though they still don't have a touchdown to a wide receiver for now going on a season and a week, they scored well. And although I don't know, beating the Texans is a huge boon to you, but the team looks great.
Well, you know, I think beating the Texans is a good test because coming into the out of the preseason and the regular season, the Texans were touted very highly, and a lot of that came from Coach Bill O'Brien and Hard Knocks. People watched a lot of that show and watched a lot of the Texans. And from what I gathered from a lot of sports shows on ESPN, a lot of the talk shows, of course, Mike and Mike and First Take, people were really, really, really high on the Texans.
Yeah, I think that happens every year with the Hard Knocks. And I'm a big fan. I've watched it each of the last, I think, 5 years or 6 years. Maybe
this is the first year I've missed it.
Okay, so I mean, it's a lot how it is all the time. Obviously, some of it is manufactured a little bit to add some suspense in some spots. But the team looks like a good team, and they really weren't missing a whole lot to begin with, but what they were missing last year, I feel like they're still missing, which is a quarterback, someone you can depend on to marshal the team on the field.
Definitely. We're going to try to do something a little bit different here right now. Like I said, we're having a little technical difficulties from the first couple minutes of the show. I'm going to try to take a call-in. If we could have someone, if you want to call in, guest call-in, phone number is 929-477-3204. That is 929-477-3204. I apologize about that. Let's see if we can get somebody on the line here and just kind of basically confirm.
Opening night jitters. Yeah, you know, if somebody out there is thinking about calling and wondering what they want to call in to talk about, I got one for you.
There you go.
I have questions about the Hall of Fame in baseball. I'm a big baseball fan.
This is great.
Well, thank God I'm already making money.
Hey, with no reason to feed the pit with EKFIT.net as one of our clients.
And so, you know, I'd love to hear some people's opinions on Pete Rose, because here's my issue with the Hall of Fame in general, which is you've got the all-time home run leader in Barry Bonds, who I despise as a Dodgers fan.
You are a Dodgers fan.
But, you know, he is the home run leader.
He is.
Or not, whatever you think, he's the leader. Pete Rose, whatever he did, he's the hits leader. In a sport where the numbers and stats are really all that matter and what makes people famous all time, how can you have the all-time hit leader and the all-time home run leader not in the Hall? Does that make it irrelevant?
You know, the whole PED issue for a lot of these players, someone said, and I do not remember who it was, that they should have a separate wing of the Hall for all the PED players, saying this is what they did. They are using performance-enhancing drugs, but they should still be in the Hall of Fame because they did things. I mean, quite frankly, when Mark McGwire broke, I think it was 500 home runs, the home run he hit it on in old Busch Stadium in St. Louis, I mean, it was a line drive. It should have never been a home run. I don't know if you remember that one.
I don't know. The 62nd home run was exactly like that.
It barely, maybe it was a 62nd home run. Barry Bonds, if you looked at it, I mean, I know people with and workout regimens and so on and so forth. Barry Bonds' cranium grew by an inch and a half. And I'm not going to tell you how. That is inside information that only one person knows, because they used to do the majestic work out of his house. He used to sew and stitch and so on and so forth. And he actually told me when Barry Bonds got bigger that his cranium grew an inch and a half. That's not normal.
And that's when he started shaving his head, no less.
Yes. If you look at him, and anyone you want, you can pull it up on YouTube. If you look at Barry Bonds when he played for the Pittsburgh Pirates when he first actually broke into the league, tiny guy.
He was also in his early 20s.
He was.
And we all thicken as we get older. Now, we don't always do it with a 1 or 4 abs.
Yes.
We all do it.
You don't turn into a monster.
No. Now, I understand kind of the consternation people have about the PEDs, but and I do understand about having like a separate wing, because I used to think that PEDs were no big deal. I used to think, hey, you still have to hit the ball. You still have to make contact. You still have to do it right.
You do it.
But let me tell you a real quick story about why I changed my mind.
Okay.
And it actually made me think about Michael Jordan later on when I thought about this issue as well, about whether or not if he was sick, performance enhancing drugs. And that is, there was one winter before the annual softball season started, and a friend came to live with me, and he was big into working out, and got me to work out almost every day in terms of lifting. That summer, over 3 leagues, I hit 8 or 9 home runs. I have hit 3 or 4 since. So if someone as remedial as myself, who's not very coordinated, not a very good, I'm a decent hitter, but I'm nothing to be bragging about, and I suddenly could become a power hitter with just lifting with no drugs, think of what that does for someone who has the talent. And I think that what I was thinking about Michael Jordan is that when people get further into their careers and they have a lot of experience to draw, they oftentimes don't have their physical gifts, obviously, but they're able to be even better players sometimes because they now know how to manipulate things to get to achieve their goals. And I think if you let somebody who's got the experience now take drugs to not only keep them vibrant and healthy, but even expand on those things, you have a good chance of getting numbers that were inflated like we had before. So, do you really treat a second haul? Because do we even know when PED started?
That's a good question, because I don't even think we even began to even skim the surface of when PED started. I go back to Mike Schmidt when he hit his 500th career home run. That man never took a steroid in his life. I know that for a fact. You look at some other ball players I don't even know to even throw the name out there right now. Schmidt came right off the top of my head because I met him a couple times. But,
we know Kirby Puckett wasn't taking drugs.
He wasn't.
We know that Willie Mays wasn't doing
it. He wasn't.
Mantle wasn't doing it. So, sure, I don't know if that really makes a difference or not. But, I still think the integrity of the Hall is in question when you don't have the leaders of the two most important stats in the game.
I agree 100% with you. I mean, Barry Bonds was a tremendous athlete. He had a tremendous swing. Even before he started taking
PEDs. Absolutely.
I mean,
the guy was a Hall of Famer before he started becoming a home run hitter.
The only person I can think of that has a nicer swing than Barry is, I'd probably say, Ken Griffey Jr.
Absolutely.
Beautiful.
Maybe Daryl Strawberry.
Daryl Strawberry, beautiful. That was a whole other topic. But beautiful swings start when you have that kind of talent to start off the bat. It's hard to get or not take performance enhancing drugs, but you also have to look at it going, when did it start? Because I really don't know.
I know Canseco was kind of blowing the lids off of it, and he was talking about doing it all the way back when he was in the A's and did his 40-40 season. It sounded, if I remember correctly, that it kind of attributes his 40-40 season to that. I know Caminiti talked about it after years after winning his MVP award. The reason he won it that year was because he went on drugs and he was going crazy. Now, there's also another way to look at it, which is, these guys have very short careers overall. I mean, even if they have a long-term baseball career or a football career, you're still talking about retiring in your mid to maybe late 30s, a millionaire, and set for life. And, you should be set for life. Is it not worth it? Should we not leave it up to them?
It's a really good question. I'm not quite sure how to answer it. I know we're going to go with this topic and we're going to talk about Pete Rhodes real fast after we talk about the PED use. I just believe that these athletes, I mean, they need to be in the Hall of Fame. They were already great baseball players to begin with, and people get forced into, well, they don't get forced, they make their own decisions. I worked down at a gym down by Lafayette College in Eastern Pennsylvania, and you knew the guys that were on roads, basically. I'm not going to tell you how, but you just knew that who they were and what they lifted and how much they lifted and so on and so forth. But I think these talented players need to get some recognition, and I think they need to be, I mean, Barry Bonds deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Barry Bonds deserves to be a coach. McGuire is finally, what is he, hitting coach for the Cardinals?
No, for the Dodgers.
Dodgers, actually, I'm sorry. You know, he finally got let back in, so on and so forth.
Well, he basically did what Barry hasn't done.
Yeah.
And you see it in politics, you see it in sports, you see it in news, you see it everywhere. This country is okay with you doing something wrong if you admit it and you own it.
That's correct. That's correct.
People tend to linger on, well, he did that, you know.
And the problem is that these guys went on Capitol Hill in front of the United States Congress and lied about what they did. And that's the other problem that everybody has. Well, they lied about it, then they got caught, then they said, yeah, we did, like Curt Schilling. Then you bring up a whole other topic of, well, what was really, you know, the underlying issue here? Because if you have to call the United States Congress to have a hearing, I think you got problems.
Yeah. Liar talking to liars isn't going to do you much good.
No.
So, I mean, you know, anyway, if anyone does want to call in, you know, give us your opinions on whether or not these PED users deserve to be in, and just a side bet on that is whether or not Pete Rose deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, even though he gambled. I, of course, think he did. Again, I just think the best players should be in. You can put asterisks all you want. I don't care about asterisks. They don't mean anything to me.
I agree with you on that point. Let's talk about Pete Rose real quick. I grew up basically in the Pete Rose era. He played for the Phillies, went back to the Reds. I've seen Pete Rose out in Colorado. His daughter went to see you. You know.
Yeah, I met him when he was out here one time.
Yeah. He's a very interesting person. Charlie Hustle. He's probably, in my opinion, one of the greatest players that ever even walked on the diamond. And yet, he admitted he bet on baseball. He admitted that he never bet against his team. So he always bet his team to win. I personally don't see a problem with that.
Well, you're talking about a guy who was a manager. So if you want to say he can't go to the Hall of Fame as a manager, he can't be recognized as a manager, I don't care. Just do it as a player. And even if you could say that he bet on games as a player, there's no player in history that you could accuse less of not giving 100% than Pete Rose. I mean, that's his nickname.
Yeah.
I mean, it was because he always gave 100%. And I think that's why he was so beloved. And I think that's why so many people are so bothered that he's not in the Hall of Fame. And that is that he wasn't the most talented.
What is it, worked on hard? 30 years now? It happened.
It's got to be close. It was 89, I think.
I think so. I think you're right. I don't have the stat in front of me. I have a really big problem with not putting him in Hall of Fame. I mean, I don't see how you can have a legitimate Hall of Fame and not have a lot of these players in it, but most importantly, Pete Rose. I mean, the man bet on himself to win.
He just believes in himself.
Yeah, he believes in his talent, he believes in his team, and I can't fault him for that.
So as long as we're talking about stats in baseball, let's move over to Cespedes, who was recently acquired by the New York Mets.
Yep.
Now, if he plays out the entire season, the rest of the way through without getting hurt or suspended or something, he should play roughly 60 games.
Yes.
So close to a third of the season for the Mets. Now, he's been off the hook. This man has been hitting runs, steals, hitting four something. I mean, the guy's just been on a tear.
He's been crazy. I mean, you see his name every morning coming across the ticker on.
Absolutely. So now, when the Mets acquired him, along with Johnson from the Braves and a few other players, Uribe and whatnot, but he's the piece that obviously made a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Mets are pulling away from the Nationals.
Yeah.
Their division to lose. Their Mets number, I believe, is 10. So my question is, you know, the pitching is obviously huge in New York. You've got Harvey, who's going to be limited at this point, but he's amazing. And then you've got the rest of that vaulted lineup coming behind him, including Matz, who's refreshing off the DL. But you've got to say that they had the great pitching early in the year and couldn't do much. Now they bring in Cespedes. Now they're scoring runs at a good clip. They're now running away with that division. Can you give the MVP award to someone that played a third of the season for that league?
You know, I'm going to go with no. He can light it up for basically 50-some games, 60, 70 games. Due to the official stats as of this afternoon, the Mets are 9.5 games in front of the Nationals. The Nationals are 9.5 games back of the Mets right now, I should say. And the Nationals have to play Philly. That's a cakewalk. Philly just fired Ruben Amaro Jr. as their GM. And the Mets have to play Miami, which is another cakewalk.
There's the Nationals crowd. I mean, you can't at this point think that there's any chance they can catch either the Cubs or the Pirates. They're too far ahead. Those two teams are going to play in the wild card. And the Nationals are back to the drawing board. And again, scratching their heads saying, did we make the biggest mistake of our careers by shutting Strasburg down when we have the magic? Because when your team is great, your team is great. And it's not always who you acquire or who you bring in over the offseason. It's when the team just gels and things are working. And they gave up that opportunity before. They may not get it again.
They may not. And that brings up another really good point that I want to talk about is teams shutting down pitchers at the end of the year when they work so hard to get to the playoffs and the ultimate prize is getting that World Series. I worked for the Lehigh Valley Annual Pick in 2008 when the Phillies won it. I've seen the trophy. I stood right next to it. It's a beautiful – I pulled the trophy from 1980 when I was in the front office down in Philly. It's a beautiful trophy, and it still is. It's even a better trophy now. And you play so many games for your fans. It's 72-game season. So you're going
to – 162 in the regular season, yeah. And then up to three playoff series. Basically.
So you're getting basically 80 games at home. Rough estimate. Do you really shut down someone, or do you really get into the playoffs and shut down? Because who would the Mets have at this
point? Matt Harvey, and what they're saying now is that they're going to let him do spot starts. They're going to basically let him pitch like 4 to 5 innings and to keep him like on track, and then let him pitch in the playoffs. And they say that their reasoning is that he's got as many innings as Strasburg did that year, but he's thrown like 100 less pitches or 1,000 less pitches or something.
It's something like that. I've never seen it on SportsCenter the other day.
I personally, if I were a GM or if I were an owner, I say I know, you know, that we've contracts are guaranteed. We don't want to risk, you know, a career-ending injury for these players. But, you know, the goal is to win the World Series.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that you could probably take a number of Hall of Famers who had, you know, 20-year careers and never won a World Series, never played in one, Ernie Banks, for example.
Yeah.
Do you think if you said to him, what if I told you only got to play for 6 years, but you got a World Series title? Do you think he would trade?
I think he would trade it in a second.
I would. I would definitely make the trade myself. I would want to be a champion. That's the whole reason.
The whole reason you play the game. You want to be the number one person. You know, that's why when you hear the latest guy in the NFL that made his kid get back his participation trophy.
Including me right now.
I don't get it. Like kids know what the score is. Even if you don't keep score, they know in their heads what the score is. I mean, did you ever grow up not knowing what the score was in your head?
Well, a little bit in soccer because they wouldn't tell us. They didn't keep track of the goals, you know. But I would say anytime you get past the age of like 8, you know, that I mean, participation ribbons are fine when you're talking about real little kids and you're trying to teach them to be teammates and learn how to work as a group and things like that. But absolutely, once you get past, just a minimal age, once you get into, you know, third grade, basically, at that point, you're thinking about winning. So that should be the goal. That should be the goal of everyone. But, you know, I mean, what can you do? I mean, you can't force people to change their ways, and some people just want to get recognized.
They do. And especially the talent pool when you're playing, especially, like, just some club ball around, and, you know, we're not talking all-star teams here. We're talking just, you know, basic township team. Well, Pennsylvania's township teams and so on and so forth. It is still a dynamic on the field right there. But, sorry, sidetrack.
The kids, you know, we got to get them playing. I think baseball actually as a whole is a little probably going to be hurting as an American player here coming up a little bit shortly, because I think lacrosse is going to dominate the scene here just a little bit, just seeing the turnout for the 3D lacrosse tournament out of Dix, which is probably about, I mean, you're talking all-stars from all over the country, and I'd say there's probably about 2,000 kids there.
Well, they can do it. I'd give them all the kudos in the world, because the NHL hasn't done it yet, and soccer certainly hasn't done it.
Soccer definitely hasn't done it. The NHL missed their shot when they did not re-sign the contract with ESPN. When they went over and said, all right, we're going to play games on NBC, it's going to be basically NBC Sports, and I have a very good satellite TV package. I do not get NBC Sports. So NBC Sports Networks carries the Wednesday night games, and then sometimes NBC Sports carries the Sunday game when we get closer to the playoff. So ESPN used to carry Tuesday night and Thursday night games, I remember, way back in the day. And it's great
to have Gary Thorne doing it and things like that.
Yeah,
I think with any sport we've seen that access to the media is huge. When you look at football, you look at baseball, we both remember as kids, you got to see your home team.
Yeah.
You got to see the local team, maybe a somewhat local team, and that's all you got, especially in the NFL. The afternoon game, you knew who you were getting. I mean, out on the West Coast, I knew I was getting the Niners or Oakland, and I wasn't seeing anybody else. And what has changed with that and with baseball is that with all these companies merging, all the cable companies kind of, you know, conglomerating into one big group, the big advantage is they can now offer one big package of money to MLB and to NFL, and the commissioner has taken it and made a fortune. You know, we talked earlier about whether or not Goodell was still relevant. And I think that even if he is seen as almost a eunuch in terms of being able to punish NFL players going forward, I think he will still be relevant, because he's turned them from a league into a phenomenon. I mean, the Patriots were purchased at something like $1 billion or something like that and are now worth $4 billion. I mean,
yeah.
If someone makes you that kind of money, the likelihood of you're sending them on their way is pretty small.
It is. So, Mark, we're going to step away real quick. I want to thank SageMediaLLC.com. And, Mark, you ever think about working out at all during the fall?
Well, you know, at this time of year, you're starting to think about when the ski season is going to start, and you got to make sure those legs are in shape.
Very true.
One of the best ways to do it is contact the folks over at ekfit.net. They'll help you with fitness programs. They've also got supplements, all coming out of one of the biggest home fitness businesses in the country. You can find them on the internet at ekfit.net. You can also find them on Facebook. They'll be sure to help you achieve those fitness goals.
All right, Mark, we're going to be right back. This is JP and Mark from the Sports Offensive. I got to call
him. Wow, that's loud.
Let me turn that down. I got to call Dan real quick. He said, call me.
So that one, we weren't as tight as we were before.
No, we
weren't.
We need
to work on that. We need to work on trying not to meander too much. But I don't know where we're going to start anymore.
I know.
You were beginning.
You were just in the middle of like everything when I realized we weren't on. I'm still on the island commercial. Just what's up? Yeah, I'm coming. No worries. I'll see if I want to do the library or not. I just maybe work with you all day. Okay. All right, that works for me. I've noticed a couple problems with Blog Talk already. I'm actually going to just roll into the second commercial. It cut us off after we had an unbelievable first segment. Our second segment, when I got back on air finally, wasn't as tight as the first one. I hope the first one recorded. I really do, because it was really tight. We were on the money. I'll be over at. Hold on. All right, we're good. All right, I just want to make sure I'll flip to the other commercial. I'm probably going to skip the library. I really don't feel like sitting in front of the computer scanning books for, you know, volunteer work. I'll probably just do Friday again.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I've had problems with DirecTV.
Right.
About minute 83. All right, sounds good, man. I will see you right about noonish.
Okay, thank you. All
right, bye.
All right, we got music. So now, if it did record it, can you cut it to, like, have the first section and then...
If I have this computer, yes, because I can cut it through GarageBand.
Okay.
He's still in the air.
What, like the viewer saying?
Well, it says we're on the air. All right, we gotta go back. Where were we actually?
Sorry. We were talking about
Hall of Fame.
I don't remember now.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are back on the air with a Sports Offensive. I am JP, and across the desk from...
Sorry about that. I don't always go by Dr. Phil.
But, you know, if you wanted Dr. Phil, I might have a little problem, man. I don't know. We were actually hitting on some baseball talk. We were hitting on the Mets. We were hitting on the Nationals.
We were talking about Cespedes and whether or not he get the MVP for a short amount of games. Now, here's the other, like, prime contenders, right? You've got Bryce Harper, who's had a real nice year, finally kind of fulfilling his promise.
He actually looks like the Bryce Harper that we all were told
we were going to see. Exactly. And then we've also got McCutcheon. That's the team that's going to the playoffs. Now, you also have Goldschmidt. You know, Goldie out in Arizona has been amazing, and he's had a terrific year. That always brings up that question of, can you give an MVP award, or should you give an MVP award, to a person on a team that doesn't compete?
That's a really tough question. I think that a majority of people would say yes to that.
But do we have to be talking about some kind of a season that's crazy stat-wise to justify that? Like when Larry, for the Rockies hit 49 home runs, 130 ribbies, batted 360.
I think you have to go over that realm. And I'm sorry, we're getting mixed feedback here that some people are getting the show, some people aren't. It sounds like we actually are on here right now. So I would say you have to put up crazy, crazy, crazy stats to be on a team, especially like the Rockies.
We've also noted that it happens a lot more with pitchers than it does with hitters.
Because
of the Cy Young Award.
Yeah.
And maybe that's because as a pitcher, you can singularly be amazing even if your team is not.
Singularly, yeah. You can definitely do that. Pitchers are that goat out in the, you know, wherever, the pasture over there. They get a start, you know, every 6 days and so on and so forth, 5 days. And you can put up incredible numbers on a very, very bad team. And I think that you draw the line with the pitchers, but, you know, the players, I think if you're on a bad team, and especially if you're not doing anything and you get traded to a good team and all of a sudden you start producing, I think the sky's the limit. Now, look at Tulo getting traded from the Rockies up to the Blue Jays, and now he's having injury problems all of a sudden.
Oh, it's shocking.
So you look at him and say, oh, you know, we got you to a contender because no one in Colorado thought they were going to give that up to a contender. I mean, the Phillies sold off the farm. They sold everyone out of that whole system. They got rid of Reuben. The Rockies finally said, Tulo, go win some games.
I would love to see the Rockies. And, you know, we've got some hometown people here in Colorado. And I think they probably are in concert with these opinions that the Rockies need to learn from the Giants. They need to learn from the Royals. They need to learn from the Pirates. They need to learn from small market teams. And what they need to learn is you can't fall in love with a player. Because
you definitely can't.
This isn't the 1930s where your team rises and falls on your star that you have forever. What they need to do is they need to continue to trade their good players, including DJ LeMahieu, Arenado, Ben Paulson, Corey Dickerson, all of these guys that they've got now that are good, Blackman.
They can trade all of these guys and keep stocking the farm system because we know they can't draft. So they might as well try and trade for good players. And if you do that long enough, at some point, you're going to have a great team in AAA and you can bring them all at the same time.
And that's, you know, the Phillies were doing that for a while. And then they kind of, cause I, like I said, I worked for the Louisville Iron Picks for a while. AAA ball club with the Phillies, Allentown, PA. And we had some studs come through. And they also traded some studs when they got the AAA level. And you hate seeing it. I know the Rockies really don't have that much in AAA right now. Their farm system is very definitely lacking. And I think they need to start looking at that and saying, we have to make some moves. Like, you have to be active in your farm league to really enhance your big ball club.
And considering that the Rockies have fewer scouts and less professional former ball player scouts than any other team in the league, I think says a lot. And if you're not going to try to draft well, and if you're not going to spend the money on health, which they obviously do not because the injuries are rampant here, if you're not going to spend the money on these things, then you have to wait and you have to make smart choices and you have to say, look, we're going to keep trading people away until we've got a serious window to actually win something. And until that includes pitching, what difference does it make? So trade these guys off, get tons of pitchers. You obviously can procure hitters. You just can't do it with pitching.
Right, I'm looking at their record right now. They're 16-84. They're 22.5 games back. And, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, the only person they got rid of was Tulowitzki.
Only one I can think of.
I can't think of another one.
For some reason, they got rid of Fowler a few years ago, who was good. But, you know, I just think that the Rockies need to be realistic for once, and I think the owners are not allowing the GM office to do that. Though I'm not sure I'm all that confident in the GM office to begin with. But, you know, let's go ahead and switch topics real quick.
Sure.
That's something that I know that you're a bit more of an expert on than me, which is college football.
Oh, love it. Football's huge. I do not move on a college football Saturday from 7 a.m. to about midnight.
You know, I have a lot of friends who tell me they pour the first cocktail and the sun comes up. They're pouring in the cocktail until well after the sun has gone down.
Oh, this sounds like an old Miss Crowd.
And, you know, so there's a lot of things you can think about when it comes to the college game. And one of the things that I thought we could talk about is, you know, they finally have a playoff. And to me, that was huge because for years I refused to watch college football because I thought it was nothing but a popularity show.
Mm-hmm.
And so many times you'd see teams like Notre Dame and other old stalwarts who weren't good anymore, but yet they win two games, go 2-0, and they're number three in their rankings because everyone loves them. Now, some teams deserve to be in there to start with, right? You've got your Ohio State, you've got your Alabama, you've probably got Oregon in there somewhere. You know, you've got good teams to look at. But in your opinion, how many teams would be the ideal number for a college playoff?
You know, I'm going to have to go with Golic on this one and say 8. So we're halfway there. I think having 4, if you look at the BCS rank, they actually did a survey. They actually did the actual BCS ranking this year as opposed to the football playoff. It would have had Florida State playing Alabama, the two teams that lost to this in the playoff. That would have been the BCS national championship game. So I think we've taken a huge step forward in that. Now, there are some definite teams right now, and I don't have the top 25 in front of me. Let me pull it up. That are just, quite frankly, they don't belong there. The SEC West is always going to get their love. Let me see if I can get this up real quick here while I talk.
I know you've seen Virginia kind of creeping up.
Well,
standing.
Virginia had to go out to Pasadena and play in the Rose Bowl. And basically, they got worked over by a really good UCLA. I mean, that team could win their division.
And if there's any time to get worked over, it's your first game. Because there's one thing that we've learned. If you lose a game in the first 3 to 4 games, it's not disaster.
It is.
But if you lose a game in the last 3 weeks,
oh, you're seeing completely disaster.
Which I'll never understand that myself, but I know that that's how it works.
No, it does. Notre Dame, quite frankly, and my friend Howie Clinice is going to actually rip my head off for this one, was overrated to begin with. They are just about, I mean, now, granted, their quarterback did go down. But, quite frankly, the backup came in and did throw a 50-yard bomb in the air.
Nothing but a prayer.
It was.
And don't forget, they had that 4th and 1.
And if they had decided not to go for that, they may not have gotten the ball back. So I give the coach, you know, credit for having the guts to go for it and making that call. But I don't think Notre Dame deserved to win that game. I actually hope that they lose, because nothing makes me happier than seeing them eliminated from contention, much like when I see the Yankees eliminated.
Oh, of course, I hate the Yankees too. Thank you, is what I call them. But disqualify from myself from saying that. No, you know, I think Notre Dame showed a lot. I think they're as good as they were last year, which was not very good. Mm-hmm. And I think that came out after the Florida State game, where they lost on a penalty, basically, in the late stages of the game. And basically what you saw is they went down into the desert, into Tempe, and got worked over by a very good Arizona State Sun Devil team that actually got worked over in week one by Texas A&M.
And we know how hard it is for people to get accepted into Arizona State, so you're talking about one of an academic group.
Yes. Number one, we got Ohio State. I think they are the hands-down number one.
It's hard to argue with anything coached by Urban Meyer.
No, they're hands-down number one until they lose the game.
And you got,
I don't see them losing again, except maybe the Michigan. The Michigan State is going to be the only test they have before they make it to the Big Ten championship.
Michigan State is going to be tough.
I know.
You know what? Michigan with Hart.
Sorry about that, everybody. Our website decided to take over the radio airwaves. Like I said, we are first night on the air. We're just trying out the whole system here.
Excuse me, absolutely. It won't happen forever.
So,
you know, one other thing I wanted to ask you about when it comes to football in college, and that was that Texas just recently let go of the AD.
Yeah.
Do you think that that was justified, and do you think the coach is on his way out too?
I would say yes and yes to both those. It was justified because Texas has not been relevant in college football for at least, off the top of my head, maybe 7 years.
Have they not been relevant since they had Vince Young?
Yeah, that's the last time they even were relevant. So they were a little relevant after Vince and McCoy. But basically, yeah.
McCoy also threw that out-of-bounds pass that kind of ended everything for Texas, and so I don't think Texas Longhorn fans care about him much.
No. I do think it was a stretch to hire the coach from Louisville to go down there. Mm-hmm. I forget, one of the boosters actually said, didn't even know who the coach was. Didn't even know his name.
Never good for a national program.
It's like, who are we hiring and why? And he's one of the big boosters. He was amazing. I don't remember the booster's name, but he's probably about 84 years old and an oil tycoon. And
he probably practice facility.
Yeah, he probably had a library and a practice facility and all that jazz. And he basically looked and said, who? And why did we come to this decision, and why did I not have any process in saying who I want?
And now we're seeing probably the fruits of that.
Yeah, I think we are. Charlie Strong is doing a good job in Texas, but the Texas Longhorn Network, I think, is killing Texas football. Texas A&M jumped out of the Big 12. And basically jumped over to the SEC, which I think is the best move anyone ever made in Texas. It's Texas A&M going over to SEC and said, we're not going to pay the royalties to the Big 12 or the Longhorn Network because there's no reason for us to. So they basically said, we're having it. And now you look, you have your TCUs, which I think is completely overrated. You have your Baylor, which is completely overrated too. Yeah, you can put 60 points on the board anytime you want. I could care less. What happens when you Baylor lost to Michigan State in a bowl game? TCU, they were trying to be in the playoffs. It's like, you're not going to make it in the playoffs. I don't care what you do to even try to do it.
Yeah, if you limp in, it's not going to do it. It's not going to do any favors for the school, for the program, or for the collegiate football.
No, they were up on Baylor by 24 points in the fourth quarter, and Baylor came back to win last year. And everybody, I think in 2 weeks we get that game again. Or 3 weeks, I think it might be. Everybody's looking at that game going, oh, what's going to happen? It's in TCU this time, and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I really don't care. I don't watch Big 12 football because it's not relevant. Now, I did watch Tennessee-Oklahoma, Tennessee dominated that game this weekend. Oklahoma finally won it in the end. Oklahoma looked good. But the problem with Oklahoma is they've been faltering late in the year. Now, of course, you have the Red River rivalry, and they're going to have to play each other basically coming up for the Texas State Fair, which is usually the end of September, beginning, I think, first week of October. You know, they're going to have to play each other. So Texas and Oklahoma are going to play just like every year in the old Cotton Bowl. They hold the new Cotton Bowl in Jerry World now, which I don't agree with, especially after the old Cotton Bowl basically put a huge expansion on that stadium. Spent a lot of money to do it, too. And then all of a sudden, whoa, we just lost our bowl game. And now you have
your personal biases against the Cowboys.
I think my personal bias is I just don't like Texas.
I think it's also kind of interesting that other teams that seem to be perennial, like you said, Oklahoma, as well as like Nebraska. Now, Nebraska has been competitive recently.
They
certainly haven't been the stalwart fear-instilling team. And I think part of the reason is that they are now in a new division or a new conference where it doesn't reward a team that can just run the ball down your throat. And
that's true.
A lot of what Nebraska had for a lot of years was never a passing team. It was always an option or a running team.
The Big Ten is a lot different than the Big 12. And I'm going to give you a little tidbit of knowledge here. Nebraska getting into the Big Ten was all part of Joe Paterno. Joe Paterno said Nebraska and Penn State, and then I want to have Rutgers and Maryland join. He wanted Syracuse to join, but Syracuse went to the ACC. That was all Joe Paterno's mastermind, to get the Big Ten to be spread across the country that far, to have that many reach to all the players.
And we all know what that comes down to. It's getting more viewers, which gets you more money.
Exactly.
Gets you a bigger contract.
It does.
So one other last thing about college football here. We do want to like throw a bone out to the local fans here for CU.
Yes.
It has not been a pretty few years.
Hard to watch.
And very difficult to watch.
I used to go to every – when we all lived back in Boulder back in the day, I used to go to every single game.
And, you know, it used to be kind of an event, and then it got for a while where people didn't even seem to want to go to the games to see you. It was nice to see them. I know it was UMass. I know it doesn't mean anything. But it was nice to see them put 300-plus rushing yards on the docket, something they hadn't done in a long time.
I remember that.
Had a number of different runners or rushers get those yards as well as getting the touchdowns. So let me just ask you this. Is there any chance in the next 2 to 3 years that we may see CU move out of their current spot as the whipping dog of the Pac-12 and be competitive? Maybe not winning it, but going 500.
I would say give it 3 years. What CU needs to do, and I'd love to move to the Pac-12 over the Big 12, because the players we're recruiting are not from Texas. They're not from Oklahoma. They are actually from they're from California. And they're from Utah, they're from Nevada. So you get that presence out there, and I'm hoping to make a trip out to USC or UCLA for one of their games, hopefully within the next couple of years. I'd love to go out there and see those stadiums. Being the huge college football fan that I am, I think if you give them 3 years, and the really big key for them is they need to recruit in the state of Colorado better. They do a horrible, 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 horrible job of doing it. I don't know if that means we already have Colorado State on the schedule, whoop-de-doo. I don't know if that's putting Air Force on there. I don't know if it's putting Wyoming on there, or Wyoming was on the schedule. I don't know what it is they have to do.
Well, throw something out there. When I was watching the game this past weekend, they were talking about the new facilities. And they were
saying
the new facility they've got in Colorado, as well as the one that they got under construction.
Yeah.
The new facilities look great. They look phenomenal. And as much as I deplore the spending of gobs of money on sports when it comes to college, where it should be for academics, I do understand that if you're going to compete, you can't have subpar facilities. The other thing that I wonder about is I see that they have an indoor field being constructed right now.
Mm-hmm.
Does it seem odd that in a state where it can plummet to freezing temperatures with blizzard winds and snow, that they didn't have a practice field indoors until just now?
It is very odd. It shows you that basically the athletic department never wanted to spend the money. And here's one of the biggest reasons. I've been going to Fulton Field ever since I moved here in 97. And there's so much to do in Colorado on any given football Saturday, we're in Pennsylvania, everyone, I mean, State College is a town of 35,000, there's 45,000 students, and the town turns into almost 275,000 people. Like,
that's what happens in Tuscaloosa every,
yeah,
every Saturday.
Exactly. And if you go to CU, yeah, you might see the truck with the Ralphie trailer driving around before the game. Nobody really knows there's a football game going on because you can go for a hike. You can go for a bike ride for free. You can do this. You can do that. You can drive under the mountains. And it's when you don't sell out games against number one teams, I think it's a huge problem. And I think the university looks at that because there was a lot of games when they were ranked and really good in the early 2000s that they you know, game against K-State. Now, granted, it snowed the night before, but the game was...
This is back when they had Heisman hopeful, right?
Chris, oh, you had Bobby Purify, you had Calhoun. Oh, you had everybody back then. I mean, when I was there at the game, they rolled Nebraska 63-23, I think it was, 61-23.
And we do know that the recruiting in state is a problem. Because we know that Columbine often has great high school football teams.
Yep.
We know that there's a lot of different Littleton and some other schools.
Cherry Creek. Cherry Creek's number one. I actually just saw Cherry Creek play Friday night and do a, what was it, a 9-6 thriller of a game against Panoma out at our West High School Stadium.
And so we've got to figure out, what is it that's causing people to want to leave a state that is so desirable like Colorado to go play elsewhere?
Well, you know, you look at it, the biggest one was Ed McCaffrey's son. He played for Valor Christian, graduated, I think it was 2 years ago. He's playing for Stanford as a starter. You know, here you have, your dad was a Bronco. You're playing in Colorado. Your whole family lives in Colorado. And you go to Stanford. Now, granted, you're going to get great education, so on and so forth, fine school.
And great exposure.
Yeah. How did we let that person get away from us?
And I think what we're seeing there is lack of legacy. We don't have anything to sell people on. We're not going to be able to sell them on having great exposure. We're not going to be able to sell them on having an amazing coach. Even though I do like our coach, I don't think that anyone's going to be wowed just by the name until something is done here. Now, I know he built a better program out in San Diego, and I'm hoping he would be doing that here. But as of yet, you know, obviously, it's going to take a little while to materialize. And until we have something to sell the school on, I'm not sure we're going to be able to change the flood of recruits going out of state.
Yeah, I agree 100% on that. The school's going to be sold on its merits alone. And right now, we are really, really looking at a really tough sell to get people to come to Boulder, unfortunately. And that's an unfortunate thing because everyone that comes to Boulder, they look at Boulder and say how nice Boulder is, how nice of the community is, how nice everything is. And now we have new facilities. We have Folsom Field, which was, I think, built back in 1912. You've got the luxury boxes. You've got, they put new lights up.
Beautiful women.
Beautiful women, of course. And, you know, we just can't keep people here. And it really gets annoying sometimes being a CU fan.
And I tell you what is also kind of concerning, and that is, you know, when all this stuff happened with Elizabeth Hoffman was the president at CU, and that was when we were competitive. And a lot of things came out with possible selling of sex, drugs, and other things to get players.
Tons of stuff came out.
I'll be the one to say it. I think all the other schools are doing that. We just got caught, and they're going to have to go back to that, or they're going to start competing.
Well, you know, I don't know if they have to go that far, but I think everybody cheats. They all cheat, they all lie, they all steal.
Absolutely.
Across the board. I don't think there's a clean program out there that plays puts every penny in place the legal way. I just don't think it's possible anymore in sports. You know, boosters are boosters. Boosters have money. Boosters want players to come. Cam Newton. Look at that. I mean, look at that mess that happened. It was Jameis Winston. It's
money is everything. Money is what makes happen in our world. Let me ask you something real quick about, we'll change to the world of tennis.
Oh, sure.
This weekend, past weekend, was the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
Actually, the last week. It was a great Open. It was one of the better ones that we've seen in a while. Now, we did see Serena lose her bid for a Grand Slam.
We did.
And it's something we haven't seen in a long time. I don't think we've seen it since Steffi Graf.
1988, Steffi Graf.
So that's a long time.
It is long.
And Serena, you know, she's right on the cusp of being mentioned as the greatest ever in her sport.
Some actually might already put her there.
I wouldn't argue with them.
Yeah.
Now, does she need a Grand Slam to cement that?
I don't think she does. And I think my personal opinion with Serena is she's been around a while now, along with Venus. And she goes over spurts where she's really, really good. And then she goes into a spurt where she's decent.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually, you know, I don't follow tennis that much. But when I heard that she won her third leg of the Grand Slam, I was like, what? I'm like, Serena? I'm like, really? She really did? I'm like, why? I'm like, I know, I mean, Maria Sharapova Serena's beat her like the last 19 times they played. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, you go down the list, I'm like, well, really, who has beaten Serena? And there's really no one out there that has her. That's the only person.
It's really only Venus, and I think a lot of that is because Venus spent so much time playing with her as a kid.
They
really know what she's doing. And it was also interesting, and I watched that Grand Slam match between the sisters. It was a great battle. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, Venus came all the way back in the second period or second set. And I will admit that I found myself wondering if it was possible that they talked about it beforehand and said, let's make it look competitive. I couldn't imagine playing my own sibling and derailing their chance at history. So
I would agree with you because I actually wonder, you know, in the back room, what was said to each other, you know, going into that match.
Venus didn't look amazing. What was the only reason that she was even competitive and then actually took that second set kind of decisively was her service. She was facing it. And, you know, we all know that that can happen, but it's also something that's easy to mask, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want to say there was collusion. And, again, I personally would do exactly the same thing. I would never derail someone.
Now, here you go into the sports betting thing with Pete Rose almost, saying did Venus throw the match? And you have to go the route of saying that she deserved to be in the Tennis Hall of Fame. Of course she does.
Absolutely. And this is just a one-time thing. Venus has beaten her in the past. And if Venus was on the look of the Grand Slam, I would expect Serena to lose. I just don't think you would do that to someone. And I think it's just a pratfall of having two of the best tennis players in the world being sisters.
Yeah.
Even though Venus has, you know, been dealing with some serious injuries and some other health problems and haven't played a whole lot lately, she did look okay, but she doesn't look nearly as athletic as she used to.
No, I would agree 100% with that.
Serena looks like she's...
She looks like a monster.
I've never seen anybody... She might be the best shape of any human being I've ever seen.
She really is. Mark, we're going to have about 13 minutes left to go on the show. I want to thank SageMediaLLC.com and EKFit.net for being sponsors. We're going to take a quick commercial break here, and we're going to be right back.
Oh, nice. Must be quieter.
Yeah, I just have to turn it on.
It says we're on air. Okay, so that one I thought was better.
Yeah, it was better.
So the one thing, I mean, I'm hopefully we can listen to this ourselves, you know. Like,
I have to remember how this whole thing works.
Right.
It should be archived. There should be actual listeners that show up.
Listen to it and kind of critique and you know, figure out. But like that one was much better. We didn't do as much meandering. But I think we got to be careful about doing too much personal experience stuff. And
yeah.
Short.
Yeah.
Because then you start getting into things that people aren't going to listen to.
Yeah, I know. I ramble into a lot of Pennsylvania things.
Well, I'll do the same thing. That's what I'm saying is we just got to kind of keep each other. Brian, I think you can hear us during the commercials.
Okay, I want you to say something.
See if we can now.
No, I just turned it down. I keep forgetting. I always have to, there's no mute buttons on this mix, so I have to turn everything down. Well, at least we know we're on.
Yeah.
I want you to say something to Mr. Aronson when we come back on. We're music.
Well, definitely. I'll give him a little shout here. Can you hear us, Brian?
We are back on the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark. Good evening, everybody, once again. I hope you enjoyed our fabulous Grateful Dead music on our intermission there.
Mark, so we were talking a little bit about tennis. Let's switch some gears here. Why don't you lead us into the next topic?
I'm not sure where we're going to go here, but I wouldn't mind talking about gambling a little bit. I mean,
okay.
Hey, this would be offensive. Why not?
Right.
We
are offensive.
We do want to give a quick shout-out to Nate and Brian, who are fantasy and gambling gurus. We will have some sessions with them later on in the year trying to help them.
Of course.
Now, in terms of fantasy football, do you think there was any massive busts or any massive sleepers that broke out this weekend? And the first one I'll lob to you is Carlos Hyde. He fell down the draft boards. He was
almost
undrafted in some places if it were not for the fact that he is the starter in San Francisco. So what do you think? Do you think he's for real, or was that just the Vikings line not having any business being on the field?
I think the jury's still out on that one because he plays in a really tough division with tough defense.
Yeah. We know you got St. Louis coming up. You know you're going to have Seattle coming up.
Yeah.
And you know we saw what they did on Sunday.
Yeah, I have to say I honestly don't know the answer to that one yet. I want to throw this one out to you. The Tampa Bay tight end. Where did this guy come from? And he scored me 30 points.
I think, you know, I read a bit about him before drafting times came around the last few weeks. And he definitely has got some talent. But I'm starting to wonder if it might be more that he's the outlet. And Jameis Winston looked so unprepared, looked so inefficient, that he had to dump off and go to his second or third read more often than you would in a normal game.
I think you're correct. I think Jameis Winston is going to use him as his crutch, basically, all year long. I did take Mike Evans in one draft, and I'm looking at that pick right now going, you know, is he really going to get the ball that much with James throwing it? Because we all know one thing. Jameis is going to throw interceptions, no matter what.
Sure.
I mean, his interception percentage ratio went up from freshman to sophomore.
But now when Mike Evans comes back, and there's no longer double coverage on Vincent Jackson, does the offense, you know, kind of explode?
You know, they have every opportunity to do it. I mean, Winston is definitely capable of throwing that big ball, but he's also definitely capable of getting down in a key situation and throwing a blatant pick.
Well,
and getting
far.
Confused.
Doing the far.
Yeah.
Well, the far, I'm going to swing it instead of making the smart play and checking down or taking the sack or throwing the ball away. I'm going to force it in there. And that's what I feel like I see with him. So it's one game. We can't be jumping, you know, into the river now. So here's a follow-up for you. On two different sets of players, and I want to know who you think is going to be the biggest difference maker in their rookie season. So you've got Todd Gurley and Amari Cooper. My opinion, probably the best overall talent at receiver and running back that were drafted. Of those two, who do you think is going to be the most effective? And then Mariota and Winston. Who's the better quarterback?
Okay, I'm going to go with Mariota and Winston first. Mariota is going to be the better quarterback. He is, definitely football IQ is off the chart right there, I think. Winston's football IQ is obviously with the interceptions lacking a little bit because he doesn't know that underneath coverage. You know, when somebody plays a two-man under on him with the safeties over the top is when he throws most of his picks. Mariota, the coaching staff there needs to win. If they don't win, I mean, that's why I was surprised they actually didn't trade the Eagles for, you know, and let them take Mariota because the Eagles, Chip Kelly put a huge package on the table and they didn't take it. That coaching staff, if they don't win, they're fired.
I think every coaching staff in the league now knows that if you don't have a quarterback who can win you games and not lose you games, you're not going to succeed. I mean, one of my friends has a great quote that I love when talking about Ryan Fitzpatrick. And he always says the quarterback that keeps both teams in the game. You know, really, well, he's going to score you some touchdowns, and he's going to score you some very inopportune fumbles,
yes,
and lose the game for you. As far as Winston, you know, I had a lot of people kind of pushing back on me when I said I didn't see a very successful NFL quarterback. And, of course, the jury is out. We're not going to know this for years.
Of course.
But what I did feel is that everybody kept telling me how high his football IQ is, how impressed people were with his football IQ, and I just don't see it when he's on the field.
I never saw it either. I watched a lot of the Florida State game. One of my friends was a Florida State fan, and I watched a lot of his games in college. A lot of his games were on prime time or they were on special time just so they could put them on the air. I never liked him. You know, the Miami game last year, You know, he made the play when he had to. And quite frankly, you know, teams just kind of faltered under him when they in opportune times, you know, and he just jumped all over it. And I don't know how to say, I don't see that football IQ being there. He was always, you know, even if you look back to his high school, he was always the biggest kid on the field. He always had the biggest arm. And in high school, he ran the ball a lot. You know, he didn't have to pass the ball that much. He ran the ball. And he's playing on good teams.
Well, at least we know that he'll always make the perfect and correct decision off the field.
Yeah.
So now, as Amari Cooper and Todd Gurley. Now, I know Gurley's not in yet, and he won't be until probably week 6 or 7. But
maybe
do you think that he'll make a bigger contribution to the Rams' cause, or will Cooper be a bigger contribution to the Raiders?
You know, I don't have an injury report. What was the injury to David Carr? Do you remember?
No.
No, he went off the field. I know that. I don't have an injury report in front of me. I'm going to have to go with Gurley just because the Raiders are so deficient at every single spot on their team. I think
that the Cincinnati Bengals are a powerhouse. My guess is no. And they absolutely throttled the Raiders.
They did.
There wasn't a game for even the first 5 minutes. It was over.
You know, there's some people that will say that Cincinnati is, but they're always going to have that question of, can Andy Dalton win a playoff game? Plain and simple. I mean, until Andy Dalton wins a playoff game, they're always going to be the team in the regular season that does great, puts up stats. Until you win a playoff game, no one's going to consider him a real challenge.
I feel he's a lot like Flacco. You've got a guy who won because his defense was amazing, and receiver made one really lucky catch. That's not, to me, a Super Bowl quarterback.
No.
And I thought it was almost hilarious the amount of money that he was given after winning that Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah. It was more than hilarious. And then that brings up a good point that I want to pose to you. What is up with everyone paying out money to players that don't deserve it? I mean, look at the rash of players that are getting paid huge, huge contracts.
You know, that seems to be a problem in more than one league.
It is.
You know, I'll never forget, and this is actually going back a bit, but I remember when Juwan Howard was going to leave the Bullets for a massive contract for someone, a max deal. And I remember thinking, he's not even the second best player on a team.
No,
maybe he
was four.
And I mean, he's not even that great of a player. He never was.
No.
And yet people wanted to give him the max money just to keep him from leaving, because on a basketball team, apparently, you know, you've only got 5 starters. You've got to have 5, you know, good players, and one great player can make a difference. As far as on the NFL, I'm at least glad that they started limiting the rookie contracts. Now we're not having teams being handicapped.
Sam Bradford's the last one that got a max contract.
Absolutely, and that really cripples a team, especially if you make the wrong decision. You pick a Jamarcus Russell.
Yeah.
Now, not only have you spent a small fortune, but you're not really getting bang for your buck.
100% right. Jamarcus Russell is a perfect example of where the Raiders might bust. I honestly, if you can point out in the next 30 seconds. More bust in the NFL coming out of college than Jamarcus Russell. I challenge you to.
Achilles.
That was before Jamarcus.
Ryan Lee? I don't know.
That's all before Jamarcus. I'm glad the NFL did that. They needed to do it. Rookie contracts should only be X amount of dollars. And I also believe that if you look at the NFL, if you have a contract and you underplay your contract, I think the owner should have a right to cut your salary, quite frankly. I know that's going to hold another topic for our next show, because we're just about out of time here on the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark. Mark, you want to put in a last quick word there?
I just want to thank everybody who tuned in and listened, and please excuse any pratfalls or mishaps. We are, you know, feeling our way through this, but I think it was a successful first show.
I definitely do too. We're gonna sign off with that. Thank you for listening tonight. You have been listening to the Sports Offensive with JP and Mark. Thank our sponsors, StageMediaLLC.com and EKFit.net.
Good night. Snag Anderson. Hey, so we just finished off there. Unfortunately, because we had a little bit of a glitch there in the beginning, our first